You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to FCAT After School, a podcast project from SFU's Faculty of Communication, Art, and Technology. In each episode, we join student hosts in conversation with alumni as they explore career journeys since graduation and gather advice for the next generation. In this episode, SCA, or School of Contemporary Art student, Zoe Braithwaite sits down with Taiwanese actor, theater artist, and SFU alumnus, Howard Dai. Howard discusses their experience working as a global theater artist today, from the newfound opportunities that have emerged post-pandemic to the challenges of adapting performance to the now all too familiar Zoom video format. In conversation with Zoe, Howard shares his insights on the importance of community and collaboration as an SCA alumnus. Here are the School of Contemporary Art's own Zoe Braithwaite and Howard Dai on FCAT After School.
I don't think any clock at SFU works. They never move.
Do you think that informs how we make work? Do you think that... I think everything informs when you live in this building. I think everything informs how you make work.
I haven't thought about
you never clocks. Know what the time is, the clock is. Maybe that informs how you work
does.
As an artist. Is you don't know when you take breaks or something. I don't know.
Okay, so Howard, welcome back to the School of the Contemporary Arts. For those listening, we are here in the music studio at the Goldcorp campus on the unceded ancestral lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. My name is Zoe Braithwaite. I'm the current third-year theater performance student here and the SCA's host for this season of the FCAT Alumni Podcast. I'm joined here today by incredibly talented Howard Dai. Howard, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you. Yes, I'm Howard Dai. I graduated from SFU Theater a few years ago. I perform mostly. I do theater kind of in Vancouver for the most part. Perform, and I also do some writing, some directing, some device creation work, and some small design and technical work as well. Just a bit of everything, whatever will hire me to do things.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So yeah, I guess you being back here at SCA, I wanted to ask, you know, how does it feel? It's going to lead to my next question, but just so far, how does it feel to be back in the space?
You know what I love the most about the space, or just the building, is that the this building really has the maybe the best rehearsal studio in the city.
That's
because when we were here, when I was here as students, we get access to these rooms and you book it.
Yeah.
They're like, basically it's available whenever there's no classes, it's available for you to use. And it's really like, now that we don't have access to these spaces, we realize how valuable it is to just like, it's spacious.
Yeah.
And really it's just like big wide open space. And then there's like, often there's like soundboard or lighting for you to use to play around, and you can't find that anywhere else in the city without paying a lot of money. You see, they're really, the rehearsal spaces in Vancouver are really like in demand. They're either pricey, or even if they're not pricey, they're just like always full the whole time. And so you can like squeeze in like an hour, 2 hours blocks, but it's never enough time for you to do anything. And so whenever I come back and look through the window, it's like, oh, I just miss being able to come in here and use the space. Yeah.
That's so fun to think about, because I feel I and most of my peers are so tired of being in this space like all day, every day.
Yeah.
And so it's good to remind ourselves this is a very cool opportunity and we should be very grateful for it. I mean, we're paying to be here.
Yes. And it makes sense. You spend
all day
every day in these studios, right?
Yeah.
And it really informs how you make work. Like the way we're trained, it's very like architecturally informed.
Totally.
You kind of consider space as part of the parameters we make work. And so coming in here, doing the work we make, in a way, the space is so big and you have we have the luxury of the space that it's often, it's not really a container. It doesn't really restrict much. For the most part, anything you want to do, you can do in these spaces. And so I think that also allows SFU grads maybe to use the space well and also like be able to do like say specific work because they're trapped in the box the whole time and they're often thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
But then it's just interesting to come back and consider how we made work in relation to the space, knowing the space we had access to.
Yeah. I know you had a long running in creating and performing your project, New Societies. And I'd love if you could talk to that relationship between what we know theater to be and how that transforms with the openings of game design and how it transforms on the digital platform to live spaces.
Mm-hmm. I had the feeling that I was maybe going to talk about this.
Yeah.
So I underneath the shirt, I have my...
Ooh!
Is it worth it? The New Societies shirt?
Incredible.
We went on tour this summer, and so we got these merch made. It's got all of our tour dates in the back. Yeah, New Societies. Just for a bit of context, this was in 2019. So the main kind of the concept master brain behind this project was Brian Postalian, and he was here at SFU doing his MFA in interdisciplinary studies, whatever the MFA offers here in SFU. And his concentration was in game design, game theater design. And in 2019, I think, was the year where he was forming this ESIS project called New Societies. And it was this large-scale interactive board game experience where we kind of questioned the idea of utopia and how people can come together to build a utopia. And so he pulled in many of like his other MFA cohorts and mostly BFA theater students and design students to come in. And so there was a cast of 11, 12, it was a team of like 13 or something when he first did it here at Studio T at the fall of 2019. And then in 2020, over the pandemic, we kind of just had a conversation about, all of us had a conversation about what it would look like if we did it online.
Mm-hmm.
And just to say, like, Brian was leading the project, but it was kind of co-created by everyone else on the project because we spent a few weeks in the summer of 2019 and then right before the show in the fall to kind of design this game together. And what was really interesting is that it felt less like a theater rehearsal, but more like a board game design meeting. Because we were there, we spent really many weeks there with the whiteboard, kind of figuring out almost equation of like how the points will work. And we had, like, I brought in a box of poker chips at one point. We like workshop all these ideas of what the game would look like. And so it started with that index tar, which is like, I remember we had index tar and we just with Sharpie drew like one stripe or three stripes, being like 1 to 3 points. Just that was the cards we were going to draw. And so we went from there. Beautiful design by Christian Ching, who was a production student here, and the scenographer of the show, who together with Brian designed these intricate pieces. And so it really became a board game project because we have these custom-made things that went along with it. But what was really special about our project was that you can't really do it without the performers, without the facilitators.
Yeah.
And so it was really a hybrid of kind of live theater performance and the board game experience. And so yeah, in 2020, we mind melded and figured out a way to transition that, adapted it into online. And it was again an effort between everyone involved on the team. And so these are all like theater students who we all had experience doing it in person already and trying to retain kind of the core of the show, which was how to get people talking to each other and interacting with one another and how to maintain these like, because it really feels like a conversation piece that I feel like the meat of the experience is we ask these evocative questions in circumstances to the players and they have to work together or against one another, however they like to, but to kind of consider these, sometimes these mirroring events happening in our real world, but set in this kind of fictional game world. And so them having to like, you know, figure out what they want to do, where their values lie and how they collaborate with one another. So we were able to kind of retain that to bring it online. It's still tricky because we did it first over Zoom. And with everyone's Zoom etiquette, what everyone had learned is that you just mute your microphone.
Yeah.
When you're not talking. And the the experience of that show is when you're in person, you're sitting next to one another and you start to chit chat with your fellow players, and then something will come up and you're like, you're all talking like kind of over one another about what to do. And with Zoom, it felt limiting in a way where we still try to do a lot of that, but people are being polite. They're like not talking over one another. Or if they do, like you can't hear anything because it just canceled out. And so I think we had a good run, but we still like did the best we could and we had a good run. And then this past summer, we had the opportunity to go on a tour to Ontario, to three cities.
Yeah.
And we did it in person again. So that was interesting too. Instead of reverting back to what we did in 2019, it was really adapting it back again to in person. Just we had discovered quite a few things that was really helpful and effective in the online version, and then we bring it back again. And it was nice to, again, that was like for May, that was the first time, even though we've been doing the show online, the first time we all got in the same room together again after 2-3 years. And these are folks that like we've known since 2019 or even before that. These are all SFU theater people. And so it's nice to be in a room again. And even for me, like, I had so much fun doing that in-person show. Because for me, part of the joy is also this ensemble that we've created together over the 3 years. And even just, I'm able to perform the show knowing that I truly, truly everyone else had my back.
Yeah.
Everyone else have been doing the show for 3 years. And we all know the show inside and out so well. And it allows for this flexibility where there's just a lot of improvisation in that show. Where someone can give me a proposition, I can, like, make up something. Mm-hmm. And I can go back. There was a point of a show where we all came to the center and we did you talk to one another to check in. And I just told them a few words and they know exactly how to handle it. And so it really allows me to be free to play because I know everyone else will have my back. And for me, I think for the audiences doing that show and for me doing performing that show, really the joy of it is the ensemble and getting to be in the same room and live, create, and play with my collaborators in real time.
That's so exciting. I feel like for myself, I started this program when everything was online. And so that very beginning of building a cohort wasn't there because, again, like you were talking about, like on Zoom, this whole thing of mute your mic, don't talk unless you have to. Mm-hmm. And so there's so much of that like bonding that felt like it was missing. And so, now I'm here in my halfway through my third year, nearing the end of this program. And I feel like, oh my goodness, there's such a weird gap in between it all. I feel like just now am I having that experience of like, I don't know what the right word is, like jiving or meshing with my people where I can have that like look at them and know what's going on, you know, which is exciting now, but then it's like, oh, well now that everything's ending, this feels so like unknown. What happens after this? Does it go back to before when don't really talk to each other unless we have to does that stay alive? And I mean, I think you can offer some good wisdom to this as someone who, as we mentioned, graduated in COVID, kind of being thrown into a time of how do I go about navigating any of this? I mean, how do you navigate the unknown?
Mm-hmm. I was lucky that my cohorts, we kind of kept things going, or at least with a lot of my collaborators, we have been finding ways to just get back in the studios. And I think because it happened so quickly at the end of our program that we didn't get a proper send-off in a way, that we were craving ways to just get back in the room together again.
Yeah.
And so whenever we get a chance, we kind of do go back in the room together and make things. And I'm always looking at a silver lining. I feel really lucky coming out of the pandemic, at least 2 years, 2020 to 2022, there was a lot of residencies that opened up.
Mm.
Started with online residencies. But then, they're just like all these like arts recovery funding and all these things that have been supporting the artist. And I felt like, and I wonder also because I haven't graduated. I didn't graduate until the pandemic. So I don't know whether there was actually more opportunities compared to pre-pandemic. But I really did feel like there was quite a bit of, especially residencies floating around. And it all started online where you started with Zoom chats with mentors, etc. But I also found it really lucky that I feel like theater in Canada is quite a small community, and that once you get quite established, you tend to go back and forth between other Canadian cities quite a bit. Mm. But over the pandemic, there's a lot of opportunity that became national, in Toronto that became available to us. Otherwise, we were going to have to fly to Toronto to do things. But there was a lot of things, a lot of residencies that became available to Vancouver residents happening in Toronto. And so I got to connect with quite a bit of artists kind of all over the country, which, thinking about it now, maybe I wouldn't have had a chance to do if it wasn't for the pandemic, because everything had to be online. And so I also felt lucky that I got to create all these connections. And New Societies, when we were online, we went on the tour. We got presented in Ontario twice, but we were in our bedroom. Going on the tour to Toronto, but we never left our bedroom. And so in a way, I was like, on my resume, I have a credit in a Toronto theater without even having to go there. And so I also just always looking at Silver Lining, just felt lucky that all these things became available to us. And I think theaters have recognized how valuable that is to artists, that they're often keeping a lot of these things, or things that doesn't have to be in person, they're keeping it available to have more accessibility maybe across the country. So I think there's a lot of residencies or things still available all over the country that is available to us. And so I would say just keep seeking out these residencies and not just looking in Vancouver, because it's still quite small, but looking into other companies, even in the States or even somewhere else that has international opportunity online.
Yeah, that seems to be the huge silver lining that's come out of all of this, is that interconnection globally because of the internet, and realizing how much can exist in a digital space.
I see a lot of shows. Well, I try to see as many shows as I can. That's one thing I really make sure I keep doing, is I go out to interact with work that's been staged in the city. And it's a small community as well, so it's nice to support your colleagues when they do work. But for me, that feel like that's the best way to one, have a pulse on what the city is looking at, and looking at the audiences to know, who's coming out to these shows? Are they liking the show or not? How is the show being done? And just figuring out, and just walk amongst these people to figure out what the city is, what the rhythm and city is like right now, tonight, when the work is being presented. And the more shows I see, I feel like I learn things from watching shows. It's like people learn how to make movies from watching movies. I barely watch movies. I'm terrible at this. That's why I don't make movies. But I see a lot of plays. And for me, play, performances, dance, sometimes trying to see more dance. But it's just going out to see things. And often that's not possible for many people, just for accessibility as well. But thankfully with pandemic, there's also a lot of shows that's also accessible online now. And so just exposing myself to works that's been done in the city, I feel really helped me as an artist. And not that it's a practice per se, but I feel that's something, that's really one of the few things I really make sure I do as often as I can.
For sure. I was listening to another podcast this morning, and they had referenced this paraphrase Quentin Tarantino quote that was if you love movies and are obsessed with them, it's impossible for you to make a bad movie. And I think that's the essence of what you're saying, is by the constant exposure to work, you learn so much. I know a lot of your work explores culture and identity, some of which could be sensitive personal material. I think of the project that, as you're talking about, your writing, you wrote Pineapple Bun and using bits from your childhood and memories. So how do you pitch and market work like that without feeling like you have to commodify it and exploit it?
That's a good question. That's always grant writing is often a yucky spot, because it feels sometimes you have to check boxes, with either there's a grant buzzword, so you have to kind of guess. Because part of what grant writing also means is what you would start with in grant writing is don't look at the funding body and see, you read their guidelines and you look at their funding focus of the year. This, often they will like poster like, these 4 years, here's what we're wanting to fund. And they give you like these big directions and you kind of look at what they want. These are what the jurors will be given. Yeah. Say, oh, here's what we want the funds. And then you look at the words they're using and you're trying to pick out those words and say, and use those words in your grant, because the jurors can look at them and go, oh, I remember, like, that's the word I'm supposed to fund. I'm going to fund that word, right?
Yeah.
And so it can often feel yucky, but this is, again, what I really appreciated coming out of this school is being able to articulate what you want to do.
Yeah.
Because I think there were many opportunities when I was in school to get to question or to get to articulate what it is we're interested in.
Yeah.
And why we do the things we do. And a lot of times our class, our black box, our main stage came with a research question.
Yeah.
And we don't know what the show is going to be, but it came with a prompt, a research question going like, here's what we're exploring. And we spent a whole semester exploring it and it culminated in a show. But really, it's all the process in exploring this one phrase or this one topic or this one idea. And so, and then through the months of making that show in main stage or black box, I'm sure you're familiar, you have these discussions in the middle. You go back and you talk about what it means. You talk about how this relates to the thing. You talk about the discovery that came out of that. And so it's being able to like talk about the art we're making that really feels valuable, so that even when I started to write grants, I can actually just sit down and just write without thinking about grants.
Yeah.
Just writing about what it actually means for me, why I'm doing this, etc. And so I think, for the most part, if you're able to articulate kind of truthfully what it is you're interested in, they are interested in that. They will fund it. Not that they will fund it, but then like, the jurors could see whether you're genuine and you're actually interested in something.
Yeah.
And yeah, I will say with grants, I've got a lot of mentors graduating theater school who really helped me out. Mm-hmm. So I did an internship with Rice and Beans Theater for quite a while, still am associated with them. And they're two SFU theater alum, Pedro Jamale and Derek Chan. And they, 10 years ago, they graduated and kind of did the same thing to make their own work. And so working with them, they were really supportive and kind of letting me look at their grants, but also just really cultivated me and helped me along with what is going to make me succeed. And so I will say, like, this work we have to do on our own, but really just connecting, like, the mentorship really goes a long way.
Yeah, that's awesome advice. Things to think about, because that seems to be a bit of a taboo topic, talking about grants and how people go about applying for that.
Well, but like, grants, like, we all need the grants to survive. Like,
exactly,
Vancouver,
yeah.
Maybe Vancouver, maybe in BC, like, compared to a lot of other provinces, and especially the states, I think there is a lot of opportunities for us to make our own work. And, in Canada Council for the Arts, and BCR's councils have, like, specific grants focus on new artists, emerging artists, so that we did often extra opportunities to get funded. And yeah, so I was really supported by mentors along the way or other colleagues who very generously share with me their grants. And so now, if other people ask me for my grants, I'll happily share with them. Just, we're not competing with one another in a way, like, we're all trying to uplift each other and help each other out. And if one person did it, that's a great win for the community altogether. Yeah,
that's a beautiful sentiment. It's really refreshing to hear that. Thank you, Howard.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It's really been a pleasure talking with you. And where can people find you next? On the stage, on the webs?
You can find me on the web, I guess. howarddye.com. I just tried to, like, oh, this is like really one of the most... Website so feels so narcissistic, where you're like, you're telling people, like, who's actually going to read it? But that's where I post things. I'm on Instagram. It's my name without a D. It's Howard AI. It's just one D in my name, Howard AI. And next time I'm doing anything, I'm not on stage for this, but I am as part of this apprenticeship fund. I am assistant directing Forgiveness, adapted by Hiro Kanagawa at Arts Club. That will go up in January, February, next spring. And it's a co-pro with Arts Club and Theatre Calgary. So I'll be in rehearsal for that middle of December. And then, yeah, they'll be on stage early next year.
That's so exciting. Okay, well, I'll have to check that out. And hopefully everyone listening will too. Thank you so much.
A big thanks to Howard Dye for joining us here on the show. You'll find links and resources mentioned in our show today and more info on Howard and the SCA program in our show notes. Our host for this episode was Zoe Braithwaite. Production is by Zoe and me, Stacey Copeland. FCAT After School respectfully acknowledges the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Katsi, Kwikwetlem, Kakite, Kwantlen, Semiamu, and Tawasin peoples, on whose unceded traditional territories our three campuses reside, and where many of the stories shared in our series take place. Make sure to rate and subscribe to FCAT After School in your podcast app of choice so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. You can also find us on social media, FCAT at SFU, that's F-C-A-T at SFU, on Twitter and Instagram. A new episode of FCAT After School, hitting your feeds January 4th after a short winter break. See you next time.